You know, several months ago, my normal route to Astoria was disrupted, and that's not really great for me, because I grew up in Brooklyn, in Sunset Park, Brooklyn, that is a Cartesian grid, and so it's very easy. If you get lost in Sunset Park, then you don't deserve to be outside, because the streets grow ascend numerically. The avenues ascend numerically, and it's a grid. And so very, very easy. If you are familiar with a box, you can find your way around. Queens, not so much. And so 2.5 years later, I'm still getting used to Queens. Anyway, when that happened, I had to switch GPS because I knew I wasn't going to find my way here. And so as I did, GPS took me on a journey. Has that ever happened to you where you're like, why did you take me down this street? There's no purpose for this. This is a dead-end street. And they tell you to loop around, and you're like, that's no purpose. You know, like they send you into the Hudson and then come out the Hudson. It's just, and I'm convinced somebody in a satellite somewhere is just absolutely laughing at us as they're just redirecting us. It was one of those kind of mornings. And I discovered in all that diversion that Queens is home to a lot of cemeteries. I did not know this. We go to the first image. This is one of the largest cemeteries in all of New York City. It is called Calvary Cemetery. What I didn't know as I did research, because I was struck. I was just like cemetery after cemetery. It was just not ending. I was like, I'm going to die here, and this is an appropriate place. I'm never going to make it to Astoria, and just cemetery after cemetery. So I said, what is this phenomenon? I researched, found out that over the history of the cemetery, there's been 3 million, over 3 million internments in this one cemetery. If it was a city, it would be one of the largest cities in America. And it was an amazing experience as I drove there. I'm not exaggerating to say that I was struck. And I prayed the whole time as I drove. The reality of how finite our life is. The reality that you and I will meet the grave one day. And it was this crazy thing. I was burdened with prayer, and I couldn't stop praying. And in fact, many of your faces came before my heart, and I prayed the whole time, and I had this gripping sense that a lot of us live ignoring this reality. We ignore the fact that we one day will no longer be here. And not just us. That's a very New York thing. New Yorkers, because of our frenetic pace, our overloaded schedules, because of our excessive entertainment, we're trying to numb ourselves from a very plain, final, definitive reality, and that is that you and I are here on this earth for a very short time, and we will all have to confront death. Why do I start there? In the middle of this series of Ecclesiastes, if you're joining us for the first time, we're going to be wrapping this up next week. We've been tackling these different themes in Ecclesiastes, and one of the themes that we keep confronting throughout this book, believe it or not, is death. Throughout this book, King Solomon is exposing the fact that life is meaningless. He says that, his first opening words, says meaningless, meaningless. Everything is meaningless. And one of the reasons why he argues this so powerfully is because of this reality of death. Death has a way of making things that we feel are so meaningful become meaningless. Think about some of the things that we get stressed out that are tying our stomachs up in knots, and just realize that one day this won't be an issue. But yet, we're worked up in a way that's unhealthy. But death also has a way of making things that we don't consider meaningful to become incredibly meaningful. Look at all these verses that we see in Ecclesiastes as King Solomon begins to tackle this idea for us. He says, "For the wise, like the fool, will not be long remembered. The days have already come when both have been forgotten. Like the fool, the wise too must die. Look at this next verse. All go to the same place. All come from dust, and to dust all return. Everyone comes naked from their mother's womb, and as everyone comes, so they depart. They take nothing from their toil that they can carry in their hands. As no one has power over the wind to contain it, so no one has power over the time of their death. And no one is discharged in time of war, so wickedness will not release those who practice it. Throughout the book of Ecclesiastes, we just went from chapter 2, 16, chapter 3, 20, chapter 5, verse 15, chapter 8, verse 8. Throughout it, one of the reasons he keeps confronting the illusions we have. We've talked about this. He confronts the illusion of work, that work can save us, that accomplishments can save us. He confronts that and shows us, nope, it's a gift, but it's a curse, and at the end, it can't save you. He confronts the illusion that if you just live for pleasure, maximize pleasure in this life, he reveals to us at the end, that's a meaningless existence because ultimately, the pleasure we experience is fleeting, and one day will be no more. Throughout the book of Ecclesiastes, he's confronting us because there's this undercurrent that death is something that unless you confront it, you will not live a wise life. It's impossible to live a wise life unless you confront death. It's impossible to actually be fully present unless we confront the reality that one day we won't be. It's a pretty heavy theme, isn't it? If you're like me and most people, we resist the reality of death. Wouldn't you agree? This is not something that you wake up wanting to talk about, wanting to think about. In fact, there's just this funny thing. I remember my sister and I growing up, whenever something would come up that we didn't want to talk about, whether it was sad or something like that, we would just go, nah, like, just to try to get it out of your head, you know? It looked a little crazy. If you didn't know us, you'd be like, they need attention. But it's just like, nah, nah. I still do that. There's certain things that I don't want to think about, and just like, okay, anyway, never mind. Let's proceed. Anybody do that? Where you're just trying to break the cycle of thought and you're just trying to be like, nope, don't want to think about that. Don't want to think about my bills. Don't want to think about another snowstorm. Don't want to think about work tomorrow. Don't want to think. Nah, 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 nah. And so what we do that. We all the more do that when it comes to a subject like death. We resist it. A large reason why we resist confronting the reality of death is because of fear. Can you say that with me? Fear. Hebrews 2:15 has an interesting idea in it. Look at what it says. It says that Jesus came to free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. One of the things that Jesus has come to do in liberating humanity, one of the things that he has come to do is to liberate all of us from our fear of death. You know, even the toughest person, the people that say, I'm not afraid of death, that don't know Jesus, I know they're lying. And I've met a lot of people that are like, I'm not afraid to die. You're a liar, because if you really were not afraid to die, you would not make some of the safe choices that you make. Everybody is afraid of death some way, somehow. Jesus came to liberate us from this fear, but one of the reasons why we resist thinking about death is because of fear. We're afraid. We're afraid to let go of this life. You know, all of us, in some way or another, we're living as if this life is forever, and as if eternity is temporary. But scripture tells us it's the opposite way around. You're having a temporary human experience. You are an eternal being. You're going to live forever. The question is, with whom and for whom? And that question gets answered in this life. So the God that you serve in this life will be the God that you will be with in the next. The God that you resist in this life will be the one that will resist you in the next. We live forever, but we're afraid to let go of this life. And one of the reasons why, especially, there's comforts that we have in this life. There's good things. We're afraid to let go of it, aren't we? The fear that one day there may not be a cup of coffee. Those are my fears. One day there may not be the parks that we like to go to. One day we may not be with the family we love, the friends we cherish. Fear, death saddens us, so we don't like to think about it. And also there's the death that comes with loss of control. One of the reasons why we're afraid of death is because it epitomizes our utter lack of control. You and I are really not in control. We like to think we are. You know, it's great. Have a 5-year plan. Have a 10-year plan. But no, at the end of the day, we're not in control. Plan for tomorrow. Plan for the next year. No, we're not in control. And that idea messes with us. We're afraid of it, and therefore we try to stay away from the reality of death. I know some of you really don't want me to keep talking about this. Just like, I don't want to think about this. All the more you and I have to think about it. You know, Charles Finney said, if I can get a man to think about eternity for 10 minutes uninterrupted, I can get him to come to Christ. We don't like to think about eternity. We don't like to think about the passing of this life. We don't like to think about how temporary it is. And so we don't think about it because of fear. And then also we're in denial. We're in denial about one day that this life will go. Think about some of the choices that we make. They're clearly not informed by the reality of death. I have a friend that he is an extreme sports junkie. And he makes choices that clearly death does not inform him. You don't jump off of a rock, like a really high one, and trust some plastic rubber apparatus to make you float. You're not a bird, you know, like that just, but no, just no consciousness of death. You don't do a wheelie on a bike on the FDR, you know, like you don't do that. Some people live as if death will never come by the extreme pursuit of social entertainment. Like, you're drinking and partying as if you can do this forever. You're having multiple relationships as if one day this doesn't stop. So we get in denial. Or how about grudges? This is the most terrible one. We hold on to grudges as if the people that we're bitter against will one day not pass away and we won't be able to enjoy moments of peace with them. You know, my relationship with my sister growing up was pretty intense. We used to fight a lot, and the girl could fight. And so, like, fist fight, like, it was intense. That's where we grew up. And so, I remember it used to be pretty, pretty bitter. And then one day, it changed. And we would never leave the house without saying we loved each other. And the reason what changed was a friend of ours died, got shot. And we were all mourning it. He was young. I think he was like 15 years old. And the reality that one day we leave this house, we may not come back, hit us. And we still fought, but we would resolve it pretty fast because we knew, I don't want this bitterness to be the last thing that we experience and remember if this is my last day. When we're in denial of that, we make choices, we live in certain ways, but when we confront the reality of death, it changes us. It's supposed to do something. And one of the reasons why Solomon keeps confronting this idea throughout the book of Ecclesiastes is because unless we confront this reality, you and I will live as if work can save us. You and I will live for pleasure. You and I will live for the temporary things and make those our God rather than facing the reality that none of those things will ultimately satisfy us. We are eternal beings created for eternity, and nothing in this life will fully captivate our hearts. But you know, Jesus says something incredibly powerful about death. Something that's unexpected and disorienting. Because I don't know about you, when I think of Jesus, at least popular renditions or versions of him is that Jesus is just all celebration, no challenge, right? It's just like Jesus is just patting everybody on the back and just like, hey, everybody, great, great stuff. Do I need to change anything in my life, Jesus? Absolutely not. You know, you're good. You know, like that's the kind of the popular versions of Jesus, which is not the real Jesus, by the way. If our version of Jesus never offends us, never challenges us, never tells us no, never calls us to confession, to obedience, it's not the real Jesus. And this is why what grips me about these words that Jesus says, what Jesus, this reality of death, Jesus is not a salesperson. He's not a small print person where he'll promise you something and then catch you at the end like a salesperson. No, he tells you up front, you know what Jesus calls us to do? He calls us to die. When he calls us to follow him, he calls us to die. Look at what he says in Matthew 16, verse 24. Then Jesus said to his disciples, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will find it. What good will it be for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? For the Son of Man is going to come in his Father's glory with his angels, and then he will reward each person according to what they have done. Jesus calls us to embrace, to confront death in his invitation to follow him. Did you hear that language? It's intense language. He says, follow me, pick up your cross, deny yourself. See, to follow Jesus is a daily confrontation with the reality of death. Not in a way that's defeatist, not in a way that's depressing, but in a way that's incredibly victorious. Because he calls us to embrace our own cross. I have a friend of mine, well, I'll never forget this one-liner. He said, the problem with most Christianity is that there's only one cross, and it's Jesus' cross. But true Christianity doesn't happen until there's two crosses, his and yours. He calls us to pick up our cross, to embrace it, to deny ourselves, to die daily. This is the only way that work will not become our primary identity, that pleasure will not become the thing that dominates our life, that the need to be famous or to have people know us will not drive us. The only way that we can be free from all the illusions that Solomon has told us about that make life meaningless is by responding to this invitation from Jesus. Pick up your cross. Deny yourself. and follow me. Have you ever had to obey Jesus in something that wasn't fun? Anybody? Sometimes Jesus tells us to do things that are a lot of fun. It's just incredible, the things that he calls us to do. So there's balance to that. Jesus calls us to do things that bring us joy, that bring us life. There's joy in obedience, even in sacrificial obedience. But there's sometimes that he calls us to do things that it's just straight cross, where a smile now is not promised. In the end, we'll smile. In the end, we'll rejoice. But right now, it's pure cross. Have you ever had to forgive someone that really wronged you? It's pure cross. You ever have to be kind to someone that's belligerent toward you? That's pure cross. Whether it's a boss, a coworker, a child, a spouse, a family member, a neighbor, that's pure cross. How about this? This is a big cross for our world right now. Have you ever had to grow in a situation where your comforts were not available, where it was uncomfortable, or more precise, a big challenge for us, we are used to, if you're of a certain age, you have grown up hearing the message that life is all about you. It's pure cross when you're in situations where it's not about you. For me, those situations have been marriage and my kids. Man, I had no idea how selfish I was till I became married. I had no idea how really, really selfish I was till I had kids. And then by the third kid, I'm just not a good human being. You know, just like, oh my gosh, I need Jesus to save me from the inside out. Oh my gosh, the things that these kids bring me to a place where it's just like, oh. If you want to relate to that and you don't have kids, babysit somebody's kids, but not the kind, not the cheating kind where they bring them and then they take them back at the end of the day. No, sit with them for a couple of days and just chill with them. Let them dominate your life and then see how that will bring you closer to God. Pure cross. Jesus calls us to pick up our cross. I'll give you even more specific. Sometimes in church, there's crosses that we have to bear in just being together as a community. There's some of us that would prefer to be by ourselves. In community, you have to pick up the cross just to be with others. There's some of us that don't know how to put others first. And so in community, your cross is learning how to calm that down and let other people flourish and be blessed. There's a cross that Christ calls us to pick up. When we confront, embrace death, what Solomon has been trying to get us to realize all along, you know what happens when we do that? Which I pray happens for every single one of us. I pray it happens for me on a daily basis. I pray it happens for every single one of us. And that is when we confront death, when we confront the reality that this life is passing, it's not eternal, this experience that to make our jobs, our success, our money, our ultimate goals is so fleeting and insane, when we were made and built for something everlasting. When we confront that, you know what happens? We get the gift of deathbed clarity. Could you say that with me? Deathbed clarity. Universally, when people are on their deathbed, that's a moment where people take an account of their life, which is tragic because this is the moment where their life is coming to an end and they no longer have time to make different choices. So tragic. On people's deathbeds, nobody ever says, I wish I made more money. I wish I was more famous. I wish I had more pleasure. What people yearn for and cry out for are the things that are eternal, that are truly significant, the things endowed by God with incredible beauty, like family, like purpose, something eternal, something significant beyond our life. Now, there was this author, maybe you read this book, it might be 20 years old at this point, called Seven Habits of Highly Effective People by this author, Stephen Covey. And he said that one of the habits of a highly effective person was this discipline of beginning with the end in mind. And so highly effective people, he argues, always think of the end, conceptualize it, and then they back up, and then they move toward that reality. And so the chapter on that discipline begins in a funeral parlor. And it begins at someone's eulogy, as someone's life is being remembered. And then he pulls you in and lets you see, this is your funeral. This is your life that's just ended. What will be said of you? Have you ever thought about that? At the end of your life and my life, what will people say about us? What will your life and my life be remembered for? What are we living for on a daily basis that if we continue without making any changes, what will be said about our lives at the end of it? That's deathbed clarity. When you really sit down and think about, if I die tomorrow, what will be said about every day from my birth till now? I think about that all the time. It haunts me in a good way. Deathbed clarity. See, when you're really clear on what you want the end to be, and if you're a follower of Jesus, our end is we want to glorify God. We want our lives to magnify his praise, to point to his reality, to expound upon his beauty, that we would be the biggest banner that would point to him. When we're utterly clear that that's what we want said at our eulogy, then we make daily choices that reflect that end. But here's the disconnect. Sometimes we say that, but yet on a daily basis, we're not moving toward that end. There's nothing wrong with pleasure. Solomon tells us that. There's nothing wrong with excelling in work. There's nothing wrong with those things. In fact, he says it's a gift if you receive it from God. But he argues, don't make it God. And at the end of the day, what would you and I want to be said at in our eulogy? I don't know about you. I don't want it to be said that I just lived for vacations, or my big goal in life was to do a big remodel in a home I buy in the future. Some people are literally living for a big kitchen renovation. Like that's their penultimate goal. Before I die, I'm dumping $30,000 in this kitchen. That's the goal. Nothing wrong with that. If you have it, enjoy it. That's the goal? What will be said at the end of our life when we're gone? We need deathbed clarity because after death, Scripture tells us this, 2 Corinthians 5, verse 10, says, "For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ so that each of us may receive what is due us for the things done while in the body, whether good or bad." You know, this is a verse that Christians are not exempt from. We will all appear before the judgment seat of Christ. Every moment of our life, we will give an account for. You know, a lot of times, if I get snippy with my wife, what makes me apologize quickly is when I realize I'm gonna have to stand before God one day about this. You know what? I really wanna win this argument now with her, but I'm not gonna win that one. And so let me just apologize. It just clears things up. There's some people that I wanna hold grudges against because they've just been plain idiotic toward me. I just have no other way of saying it. I'm just being real. Just like, why? Why? Really? And you know what helps me speed that up? And something I got to speed it up on a daily basis is to realize one day I stand before God, and not just the things that I do, but my heart is going to be judged. When we live in light of that reality, this is how we avoid a meaningless life. When we realize eternity is what matters. Death helps us honor God with our lives. I know we don't like to think about it. Death can be a scary thing. But death helps us honor God with our lives when we confront the reality of it. And when we realize that we don't have to be afraid of death if we've put our full trust in Jesus. You know, this doctrine of judgment, of at the end of this life, God will judge everything, is the most beautiful, equitable vision of life that the world has ever heard or seen. No other faith system or way of living promises that at the end of this all, everything will be judged and everything will be made right. That gives us great comfort and assurance, because in this life, sometimes things go wrong and they don't get right while we're here. But we have this promise that after death comes judgment, and judgment makes everything equal. Everything becomes just. And when we know that, it causes us to live differently in the present. Here's what I'd like us to do as we close. If I could invite you to stand. Worship team, if you could come forward. We're going to respond in song in just a moment. I know this is a heavy subject, and it's not something that we intentionally want to think about. But I promise you, if we confront this reality and live in light of it, in light of who God says he is, with his power and grace, we can start truly living in the present life.